Number nine, come, now is the time to worship number nine and sing the journey.
I want you to take a moment to think about their mothers. To put aside these men reclining around the table, talking about Jerusalem, perhaps preparing for a revolution, perhaps hiding their fears, dipping their bread into the bowl of olive oil, listening to their strange and wonderful teacher talk about things they barely understand. I want you to put those men aside, even Jesus, for a moment. Leave them there in their upper room and take a moment to think about their mothers. For surely all these men have mothers, or women who are not their mothers, who have always loved and cared for them. For simplicity, I'll call them mothers, all the women in their lives whose love and care have made them what they are. Someone's mother is back in Galilee, terrified of what could happen to a man who quits his job to follow some rabble-rousing revolutionary preacher. Someone's mother may be sweeping and re-sweeping the same patch of dirt floor over and over again, waiting for an uncle or a neighbor to return from the city, hopefully with news from her son. Someone's mother is here in Jerusalem, perhaps waiting below, standing guard to warn of soldiers or a mob. Perhaps someone's mother is in that upper room, cooking the traditional Passover supper. You don't think these men baked the bread that Jesus blessed and broke, do you? Someone's mother is on the road, having heard rumors of what happened in the temple, rushing to make sure her beloved son is not caught up in the aftermath. What did these mothers say when their sons left? When they took off to follow Jesus? Did they follow too? Did they demand an explanation? given that in the Gospels, especially in Mark, the disciples are often portrayed as having no idea what Jesus is talking about. So I can't imagine their explanations were very convincing. Well, how do I know he's the Messiah? Well, you can hear it when he speaks, Mom. So much wisdom. What kind of wisdom? Well, okay, you see, there was a farmer growing some seeds, and the ones that fell on the good ground, they became a pearl of great price. And the farmer paid everyone the same wage because they were all invited to his wedding. And you shouldn't put your lamp under a bushel because you have to be ready for the bridegroom, or else you won't be salty anymore, and you'll have to put out your right eye. Well, I swear, Mom, it makes a lot more sense when he says it. I know it's an anachronism, but I like to imagine the disciples' phone calls home before the Last Supper. What might their mothers or their beloved non-mothers say on what is about to become the very worst night of their lives? Would they urge their sons to come back home? Would they bubble with excitement for Jesus' triumph? Would they plead for caution, pray for their son's safety? Would they say, "I miss you"? Would their beloved son say, "I miss you too, Mom"? We can never know. But what we can imagine is on that night, they heard words of love and care and encouragement, a mother's prayer, straight from the lips of Jesus. Jesus prays for the disciples with the words of a mother, with words that could have come from their own mothers or from our mothers. In fact, I want to invite you to imagine with me. Imagine that in the movie version of the Last Supper, we see Jesus standing in the upper room and praying, while a middle-aged woman in Nazareth or Bethsaida or Magdala, tears streaming down her cheeks, we see both lips begin to move as the camera shot goes back and forth between the two, sometimes side by side in split screen. In unison, we hear them pray, "O God, I have made your name known to those whom you gave me. They were yours, and you gave them to me, and they have kept their word. For the words that you gave me, I have given to them. I am asking on their behalf, and on behalf of those whom you gave me, because they are yours, and all mine are yours, and yours are mine, and I have been glorified in them. Holy Father, protect them in your name. While I was with them, I protected them in your name that you have given me, and I guarded them, and not one of them was lost, except the one who chose to be lost. But now I am coming to you, and I speak these things in the world, so that they may have the joy made complete in themselves. I'm not asking you to take them out of the world, but I ask you to protect them from the evil one. Sanctify them in the truth. Your word is truth. As you have sent me into the world, so I have sent them into the world. Righteous Father, the world does not know you, but I know you, and I know the ones you have sent me. I made your name known to them, and I will continue to make it known, so that the love with which you have loved me may be in them, just as I am in them." These words, uttered by a perfect man, bring a whole room full of imperfect men who grew up in the love and care of their mothers, in the love and care of all kinds of women, into the love and care of God. Jesus considers the disciples to be those whom God gave him, just as they are those whom God gave to their mothers. And like a mother whose child is heading into adulthood, eager yet understanding nothing of what's to come, Jesus is both praying for their protection and preparing them for life without his physical presence. Like many of us and our loved ones right now, at this moment, the disciples are on the brink of a type of graduation from followers to leaders to founders of a faith. But before they get there, the disciples are about to face their darkest hours, the hardest trials they've ever known. We sometimes feel like we may be in a similar moment. We have an inkling that things are about to get crazy, that the unthinkable might happen, that violence, cruelty, and capricious injustices may become the norm. We fear that evil will burst forth into our society, maybe touching even our own safe and privileged lives. But even in the very midst of darkness, even in the moment of our fears, we are not forgotten. In the same prayer Jesus offers for his disciples, he remembers us. Jesus says, "I ask not only on behalf of these," the disciples, "but also on behalf of those who will believe in me through their word." That's us. And what does Jesus ask on our behalf? that we may all be one. Jesus prays, as you are in me and I am in you, may they also be one in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. The glory that you have given me, I have given them, so that they may be one as we are one. In his motherly prayer for the disciples, Jesus prays that we later followers of Christ may all be one, may all be united into one family. Jesus claims us. Jesus joins us. Jesus sends us into the world as one. We may soon find ourselves frightened, much like the disciples will be, with cruelty and violence staring us in the face. But we don't have to face those days alone. We are one together because we belong to Jesus, who said to God, all mine are yours, all yours are mine. I want you to take a moment and think about their mothers. Not because the disciples all had perfect mothers. Surely they didn't. Neither do we. I want you to think about their mothers because we don't know who they were or how they felt or what they said on that fateful night when Jesus was betrayed. But we do know they were out there, somewhere. We know that even on the worst night of their lives, even when the disciples scattered and failed to be as one, they remained in the love and care of someone. They were not alone, and neither are we. We and those disciples belong to Jesus, which means that we are one, no matter what happens, no matter who our mothers are. We remain in the love and care of one another and in the love and care of God.
For our hymn of response, please take your purple Sing the Storybook and turn to number 49. I Will Come to You in the Silence, number 49, and Sing the Story. And I'll ask you to stand.
Follow me.